Well, hello, everyone. It's Tanya Gabrielle here, and this is our Future Forecast Formula call for February 18th, 2014. And it's a double 9-day. We're in a 9-month universally. We're in a 9-day today. And it's interesting that one of the questions that has come in for the call today concerns Amanda Knox. You know, 9 is the number of endings, and it's very appropriate we can talk about and look at her chart. So I'm just going to give out her birth information first so all of you can take it down, and then once I get to the questions about her, some of you or all of you may have just figured out her numerology, her current name, and of course I'll get into all of that, and also I'll give you her birth time and birthplace so you can construct a chart as well and refer back to this call, you know, to double check on your findings as well. So let me give you out that information. So her birth name is Amanda, A-M-A-N-D-A, Marie, spelled M-A-R-I-E, Knox, K-N-O-X, and she is born on July 9th, 1987. So 7-9-1987. And she's born at 2:47 a.m. in Seattle, Washington. Okay, so that's her birth info. And I'll get to the question that Linda asks about Amanda shortly. And if, Linda, if you're on the call, you can get in line, press star 6, and we can discuss this further. And then also I have a question from Rayora, so I'll answer that one first. I only will be able to answer this partially, Rara. As I emailed you, I need your client's full birth info in order to help you fully look at your questions. I don't like doing things without the complete birth information because, as you know, it's the full, everything informs everything else. So, but I will look at her chart with you. You did ask a question about her finishing her 9-year and looking at the clustering of planets in her chart. And so this is, first of all, a client of yours who has 4 planets up at the midheaven, all bunched together in Leo. That's Moon, Mars, Saturn, and Pluto. So that's definitely an intensity in Leo there. And she also has a conjunction of Venus with Uranus, which is 9 degrees apart, and then another conjunction of Sun and Mercury. So almost all her planets, except for Neptune and Jupiter, are in some kind of conjunction alignment with each other. So yes, there's certainly an intensity there. And you mentioned that she's in a 9-year. I don't have her birth name or current name, so I cannot speak to how everything is affecting her right now. But what I can tell you is because she's born on the 18th, this 9-year obviously is extremely important to her. She would feel more emotional, and at the end of every 9-year is when it does get very intense. That's just numerologically, because if there is anything that you haven't addressed psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, and released, it will really have an effect on you closer to your birthday. And her birthday is in April. So she's coming also into that time, that 6-week before your birthday time, which I've talked about before. I think I've even written about it in one of my newsletters. But 6 weeks before your actual day of birth, it can get very intense, and usually does, as you address everything you haven't in terms of things that you needed to look at during that personal year, and during the astrology that's lined up for you. If you haven't addressed those particular issues, then you feel it even more. So she's about to come into that in early March. The reason she may be feeling it now is because of the 9 universal months that we're in. So you can see how the numbers are speaking to her universally right now. That number 9, which, as I said, is important to her because she's born on the 18th, really is, you know, something that we need to always bear in mind, even universally. So that's being triggered. Plus, we're in this Mercury retrograde period, which, again, makes this number 9 universal month even more intense because it's coupled with a Mercury retrograde. And so the actual call and prompt for us to release is doubled by virtue of the astrological phenomenon, Mercury retrograde, and the number 9. And, you know, to top it all off, we're in a 7 universal year, which is all about looking within. So, and that's the hardest thing for all of us to do, is we tend to look without and rely on others to help us answer questions. And it's hard to just get quiet and look within. So, so that speaks to her briefly to the 9 universal year. I also want to mention to you that I did look at her transits, and one of the things I notice is that your client currently and for the last few years has a T-square with Uranus and Pluto and her moon. And her Neptune in the 11th house. So this is a very, very big transformation time for her. And you did mention, Royora, that your client is being affected right now by the transiting moon. That is true. The transiting moon is currently affecting and triggering her Neptune. But what makes it even more strong this time around is, and she'll feel this for a while because Jupiter will be here for a little bit, is that Jupiter is squaring this T-square right now. So Jupiter is literally creating a grand square. So transiting Jupiter at 10 degrees in Cancer is currently squaring Uranus and Pluto. It's opposite Pluto. It's squaring Uranus. These are all transits. And then your client's Neptune is forming a grand square with these planets. And so when Jupiter gets involved, it expands everything. It makes everything much larger and more expansive and magnetic. And so this would trigger your client even more. And as you know, Neptune is about very deep sensitivities and feelings, and there could be self-deception going on that she needs to look at. So this is all for you to discover with your client. The other thing that I want to mention in terms of your client, Royora, is that her progressed moon is at a critical degree right now. So that intensifies things even more. And at 28 degrees. And then finally, in her solar arcs, she has Neptune conjunct Uranus. She has Mercury at 21 degrees Gemini, and her natal Uranus is at 23 degrees Gemini. So that solar arc is starting to happen, and that definitely indicates change. So this is more of a 2-year situation with her, or 2 or 3 years, where she's really going to feel that intensity in the 8th house of really looking within subconsciously. And finally, to speak to the same kind of solar arc situation that just began, she has solar arc Uranus conjuncting her natal moon. Within 2 degrees. So that just, recently began as well and will continue. So those are two very, very profound solar arc conjunctions. Obviously, the one to the moon would affect her emotions. And they both involve Uranus. One involves her natal Uranus. The other involves her solar arc Uranus. So there's definitely changes. And so she'll have to really be flexible and be able to adapt to those. Okay, so let's move on to Linda's question about Amanda Knox. Now, I did give out her birth info at the beginning of the call, so if you want to follow along, we are looking at Amanda Knox's situation with her being convicted again on January 30th, 2014. And Linda had a question, or several questions, about that situation. So let's go look at those. Now, Amanda was born on July 9th, 1987, and that is, That gives her a 41-5 life purpose number, a 9 day of birth, and she has a 9 destiny number. So I always start off with numerology in these kinds of readings. She has a double 9 in her 3 important birth numbers. That does give her an inflated sense of self, unless she is very evolved and takes on the role of the wise leader, wise humanitarian. But for many people, having a double 9, even a single 9 as one of the important birth numbers, can bring up the ego issue. So for her, that's something she just has to watch. Now, notice her current name, Amanda Knox, spelled K-N-O-X, is a challenging number. It's the 35-8. So, again, this is something I always start off with every client. That's what I check. 35, you know, she may tend to listen to other people to get advice instead of listen to her own intuition, especially when she's younger. She may even accept bad advice from others. So even in the course of her court situation where she was, you know, dealing with the Italian court system, who knows what kind of advice she was given. And also before that even happened, the whole incident, you know, with her good friend Meredith Kircher, who ended up being, you know, murdered, who was she spending time with? Because with this kind of name, 35 names, 26 current names, and 44 current names, they can not only take on advice that isn't congruent to their own, values, not only that, they can also spend time with people who are not helpful to them. So they always have to be very careful and listen only to well-intentioned advice from other people. So that's number one. And so I look at that and I see, okay, she may have an inflated sense of self at times, and she has a challenging current name. Now, you specifically asked about something that happened on January 30th with Amanda Knox, and so that particular moment was a new moon. And so that's important because it would have magnified anything at the time. And so for her, this particular day really ties into what I just started off with in terms of my looking at her birth promise, okay? Because in this year, she's born July 9th, so if you do 7-9-2013, she's born in July, so we're still in the previous personal year, right? You add those numbers up, she's in a 22 personal year. That's a 4, okay? Then the 30th of January is a 26-8 personal day for her. So we have the 4 and 8 activating her 8 challenging name right there. So there is a fateful quality to not only this particular year, but to that actual day. Remember, it was a new moon, and that made it even more powerful. So, you know, we have to always bear these things in mind. That actual day for her, also in January, for her, that month, was a 23-5 personal month. And so remember, her life purpose number is 41-5. So that tied in with the question of freedom for her. You know, she's definitely wants to be free. She has that freedom number, the number of change and risk and adventure and travel. And so that is something that was triggered that day as well, is that the issue of freedom was looked at for her during that month. Okay, so that's her numerology. So then we'll look at her astrology chart. At the beginning of the call, I gave out her birth info so you could look up her chart or refer back to this call. She was born at 2:47 a.m. in Seattle, Washington. So looking at this birth chart, I know that Linda may be on the call and she can speak up if she has additional questions. But what I do want to say initially, before I get to Linda's second question here, is that we have a very interesting set of triple conjunctions in her chart. One is in the seventh house and one is in the second house. And, you know, her sun is in the second house in one of the triple conjunctions, which is with Venus and Mercury and the sun. Her sun is at 16 degrees, which does show definite changes in her life. ups and downs, and then Venus and Mercury are at 4 and 8 degrees. That does tie in with her challenging current name. And of course, the second house is the house of personal possessions, of self-worth, of values, and it's in Cancer. Her second and third house are both in Cancer, so that rules, you know, her feelings. And so with Venus and Mercury there, that really does make her personally feel very invested in how she feels about her self-worth. And that is being challenged by Neptune, because Neptune is opposite this triple conjunction. Neptune is in the eighth house, which is the house of life and death and change and sexuality. And that is opposing her sun. It's opposing her Venus and Mercury. So that's a very strong opposition there. It definitely affects her life. So it makes her extremely sensitive, idealistic, loving. She's a lover of beauty. She's very cultured. She obviously would be interested in other cultures. She loves music, most likely poetry. And, you know, Mercury's involved, so she speaks well. She likes to write. On the other hand, it can bring deception, and either deception from others, or she feels deceived, or she deceives herself. Now, I personally don't think that opposition alone makes her somebody who would go out and lie about this kind of crime. I don't think that the opposition is showing that necessarily. It just means that she may be caught up in illusions and delusions. You know, and so because Neptune's in the eighth house, that does rule, is ruled naturally by Scorpio, and so that is a house of, like I said, life, death, and rebirth. And then we have another very interesting situation, because Neptune is in that house. That house is ruled by Capricorn. And Capricorn, which also rules, by the way, her ninth house of travel, which we'll get into in a moment, you know, foreign travel, everything foreign. Capricorn, the natural, the planetary ruler of Capricorn is Saturn. And Saturn is literally on Amanda Knox's descendant. It actually conjuncts her seventh house and her descendant, and it's opposite her Gemini ascendant. So this is a very strong position for Saturn. And because Saturn rules that house that Neptune is in, you know, again, this is the life, death, transformation house, there's karmic stuff going on as well with her relationships. Because as I said, she has a triple conjunction with Saturn in the seventh house. That's her intimate relationships. And it's in Sagittarius, by the way. Her seventh house is ruled by Sagittarius. And Sagittarius is the natural ruler of the ninth house, right? So the ninth house is about travel and foreign cultures and all of that. And we'll get to the ninth house in a moment when I look at what happened with her on January 30th, transits, progressions, solar arcs. But that position definitely brings a sense of fate and karma and destiny to everything that relates to her intimate relationships. It's very emotional. She's definitely magnetically attracted to, you know, foreign countries or interesting men with this kind of placement. And so that is something to note. Now, Jupiter is another planet we need to look at, because Jupiter rules Sagittarius, that seventh house, and we want to see where Jupiter is. And lo and behold, Jupiter's in that 12th house. Now, the 12th house is the house of endings in astrology, and the subconscious and the deepest, you know, resources that you have, the secrets and all of that. Now, Jupiter in Aries makes it a very outspoken Jupiter, because one other reason is that Jupiter is squaring her natal Mars in Leo, and that makes her Mars very, very outspoken. And it's being magnified by that Jupiter. You know, Mars in Leo is just a strong placement for Mars. That is in the house of communication, the third house. So she's going to really speak her mind, and sometimes to the detriment of herself, because, you know, that's a very strong, outspoken, position there. And so it's being magnified by that Jupiter in the 12th house. And the 12th house position for Jupiter is not necessarily an easy one, because the confidence that Jupiter brings is put into 12th house issues. And the 12th house, you know, rules endings, and it rules prisons. So that Mars-Jupiter, you know, they like to take risks when they're together like that. And Mars is also opposite Pluto, and that makes her hugely determined and rather forceful. And I really think that possibly the Italian media was not favorable to her because of that kind of position that she would take. There's a lot to her chart. I can't get into everything, but there's many things that make her very magnetic and very strong, very strong-willed. In this case, there was a situation she got involved with that was quite challenging. I want to mention one more thing. Her south node of the moon is in her fifth house at 5 degrees, and it is conjunct her sun-moon midpoint. Her sun-moon midpoint is 4 degrees Libra. Her south node is 5 degrees Libra. And so that, to me, again, the sun-moon midpoint is about your relationships. The south node is about the past, you know, past life, past karmic issues that you're resolving. That, again, shows a very strong pattern that we've seen already in her chart about intimate relationships being so much part of her learning destiny. She just will learn so much and grow so much through understanding how to handle those relationships. And so that is initially my input for her natal chart. And then, again, Linda, if you're on the call, you can press *6 and ask more about that. Let's see here. You also asked about, that's right, the Luna eclipse on November 28th would have affected her because it was in, what are you saying here? That's right, because it was in Sagittarius, and so it would have affected Gemini, Virgo, Sagittarius, and Pisces within those degrees. Yes, that's right, because it forms either an opposition, a conjunction, or a square. And any of you would have seen that had you drawn it up in a person's chart. So in terms of Amanda, and this is a very good question that you ask, yes, it does definitely affect her, the fact that that new moon was in that placement. So because it triggers her seventh house, it triggers that whole situation we talked about before, and it would for a whole year. So that is definitely important. But what I also want you to note, this is very, very interesting, that it happened. This is like a double trigger here with the moon. That actual eclipse happened while her progressed moon was also in the same location. Okay, if you look at her chart on January 30th, which is when that new moon happened, that her progressed moon is sitting at 9 degrees on her descendant. So when that eclipse happened back in November, she had a double moon situation going on, which is really, really a big deal, because emotionally it would have truly affected her big time to have that kind of situation. Now remember, her moon is in that seventh house too. So everything relating to relationships is going to be triggered. So this is really huge. Another thing I want to bring to your attention as well is, if you have constructed her solar arc chart for the day you asked, Linda, which is January 30th of this year, when she was convicted again, what I note is just right before that, her solar arc sun, which is the same as the progressed sun, of course, moved into 12 degrees in Leo. And again, 12 is the victim number, so if there was any kind of situation in her life, which obviously there was, you know, having been convicted previously, and then that was overturned. But there is a sense of victimhood there. So once that sun moved it to 12 degrees, it triggered that numerology as well. And that 12-degree sun also now is exact in a sesquiquintile to her natal Jupiter. So her current solar arc sun on that day and now for a year is at 12 degrees in Leo. Her natal Jupiter is at 27 degrees in Aries. And now remember, who rules Aries? Mars rules Aries, and that's that outspoken Mars she has in that third house. So, you know, that's a magnification of that number for her. Also, these are very emotional numbers, 27, 12, right? So keep that in mind as well. And then finally, I note that in her ninth house, she has two things going on. Again, the ninth house is the house of foreign travel, foreign cultures, a higher education. And so for her, there are two things going on. Number one, her south node of the moon is receiving a sesquiquintile, which is 105 degrees, from her solar arc Uranus. So that's important because it involves change and the change and the perception of change too, from other from greater communities, from the media, etc. And then the last thing is, and this is really important, is that her natal Mars at 1 degrees in Leo is there's an opposition to it from Neptune, solar arc Neptune. Solar arc Neptune is at 1 degrees. And it's directly opposite her natal Mars at 1 degree. So one is in Leo, Mars is in Leo, and then solar arc Neptune is in Aquarius. This is happening in the ninth house with these two solar arc planets. So that, again, that can be challenging because it gives her, it weakens her. You know, when Neptune opposes Mars like this, there's a weakening of her energy. There's a lower vitality. She doesn't feel quite as confident. This is not an easy position for Mars. And, of course, it lasts a while, you know. So anyway, those are my takes on some of the arcs, progressions, transits for Amanda Knox on that January 20th date. There's one more thing I want to bring up that is important, and actually two things. If any of you want to keep studying this situation with Amanda, on the 1st of November 2007, Amanda's solar arc sun was 1 degree from being exactly square to her natal Pluto. So she literally came into that one-year window where her solar arc sun was square to her natal Pluto. And that really, that would have set off a difficult year for her, which is the year that she spent in jail. The sun rules her fourth house, remember. Her fourth house is ruled by Leo, and sun is the ruler of Leo. So her home was transformed. You know, Pluto transforms things. Pluto is about life, death, transformation. And so that's what happened. That's a very important solar arc that happened at the time. Okay, so her literal residence changed for a year during that time. And the other thing I want to mention is that in Meredith Kircher's birth chart, she has the south node surrounded in Scorpio in her eighth house by Pluto and Mars. Either side of her south node has Pluto on one side, Mars on the other side. That's a very, very deep, profound, powerful, and can be very challenging aspect because it's hugging basically the south node in her eighth house. And her eighth house, you know, the eighth house is naturally ruled by Scorpio, right? And Pluto is associated with Scorpio, but Mars was the original planet that was associated with Scorpio before Pluto was discovered. So Some astrologers still even look at Mars when you're looking at a person who has a strong Scorpio in their chart. They will look at Mars as well in association with Scorpio. So the fact that Meredith had this in her eighth house is important, but what makes it even more important in relation to Amanda, which is who we're talking about, is that Amanda's natal Pluto was conjunct this whole triple conjunction in Meredith's chart. So there was a huge Pluto activation between these two that was in Meredith's eighth house. And so that is something to keep in mind as well. Okay, I think that's a huge amount of information at this point. And now I will open it to questions. Linda, if you're on the call, let me know if that covered what you're looking for. I see we have one question here. Let me go to that. And then anybody else, press star 6 if you have other questions about anything relating to forecasting. Let's see who this is. Hello? Hello?
Hi, it's Rayora.
Hi, Rayora.
I apologize. I got on late because I lost internet connection and couldn't get your phone number, so I missed part of what you were saying. And Linda intended to be here, but she had a medical emergency and called me just before the call to let me know that she wouldn't be on the call. What she wanted me to ask you regarding Amanda's chart, though, was mm-hmm. whether the eclipse, since it was back in November of 2012, if having one of the, I don't know if it was a solar or the lunar eclipse, but one of them was that one of them happened during a Mercury retrograde, and she was wondering if that would delay the reconviction.
Absolutely. I forgot to address that. That's why I talked about the double moon issue. Yes, it delayed it, for sure. And
okay.
I really do feel that, because Mercury retrograde has that effect, especially, when it comes to deep issues such as this. You can really see a delayed effect like this. And because it was an eclipse, the delay was really quite a delay, right? So it was
it
wasn't within that first year. It was after. So, yes, that's a very good question, and the answer is yes.
Another thing we were wondering, we're a little confused. Are we supposed to draw aspects from the ascendant, midheaven, and nodes that are in the transit progressed and solar arcs charts? Are we supposed to include those in when we are doing the aspects to the natal?
Oh, you're talking about the transiting midheaven and ascendant
and all
that?
Transiting and the one in the progressed and the solar, all those. Are we supposed to draw aspects from those as well?
No. The only time you do is not with transits, not with progressions, but you do with solar arcs.
You do with solar arcs.
Yeah, solar arcs, it's important to do, to actually look at all the angles, well, especially ascendant and midheaven. Those are very important. And the nodes. In solar arcs, yes, but not in the transits. I do occasionally in progressions, but I really, really in progressions just focus on those first five planets. That's what I really focus on.
Okay.
So, but you can, I mean, you can look at it in the progressions, but really for the solar arcs, every one of those is very important.
If one of those was sitting at a critical degree, would that make a difference?
Yes, absolutely.
That's what I would figure, that would probably
enough
to call it
really
into
does.
Play,
mm-hmm.
you bet. And that's one thing that we noticed so much with Amanda's chart, was especially the transit chart. It was just on fire with so many critical degrees. And the 4-8 factor was just alive all over. So I really picked up on that when we were working it.
Yeah.
And I may have missed part of what you addressed on that. I know I did, because I came in so late. But I'll listen to the replay and get it.
Yes, and I did answer your client question without the info that I actually needed. I think I don't know if you received my email since your internet was down.
But
I do a reading, I usually want everything on the client. But I did answer what I could based on what you sent me. So that's on the call, so you'll hear that. Yeah.
All right. Yeah,
so.
All I really was concerned about was what the clustering meant. That's why I didn't include her. I think you had her life purpose information there, but the destiny was not with you. But anyway, okay, I'll go back and listen to the replay on that too as well. Now, one other question I had, Tanya, was You have referred to Mars as being the timekeeper.
In transit.
As it crosses the ascendant.
Yes.
And you say the progressed moon is a timing device. And yesterday you mentioned that Saturn was a timekeeper.
Saturn is called Kronos by the Greeks. And so you know, when Saturn transits through the chart, which takes around 29 years, it can indicate major changes that can be kept, you know, time-wise. Now, it doesn't trigger, like, actual events like the progressed moon does. But it is considered Kronos, the planet of time, because of its, you know, the Saturn return, and when Saturn goes a quarter way through the chart, there's a definite moment in time in your life, you know, every quarter that it goes is important. So when it squares, when it conjuncts, or when it opposes the natal Saturn is what I'm talking about. So it's called naturally the planet of time, and so I called it a timekeeper because you can use it in that way when there are major moments, you know, in your life that come up like that, you know, during those four cycles.
Okay. So just let me run this back and see if I'm understanding you correctly. So we watch for Mars crossing the ascendant because that starts a new cycle, correct?
Yes. And you just feel it more because Mars is a planet of energy. So that's when you feel energetically something can happen.
Okay.
Right.
But progressed moon is more a trigger for events.
Yes.
Okay. And Saturn, then, I'm not sure how I can express this. When it hits like the ascendant, midheaven, and so forth, the four major angles there, that's when we're going to sense Saturn as a, is it to a trigger? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that those four angles are important, and also when Saturn squares, conjuncts, or opposes natal Saturn.
Oh, okay.
So, because those are considered major moments in your life. You know, the Saturn return is something people know about at age around 29 and 58
right.
or so. But then there
okay.
are those other three times as well where Saturn squares and, you know, opposes natal Saturn.
Uh-huh.
And so in that sense, that's why the Greeks called it the Kronos, the planet of time.
Okay.
Because you really do notice major shifts in your life where you pretty much grow up and grow out of things during those moments. Yeah.
I see. Okay. Well, I guess that covers that then.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up, you and Linda brought up Amanda Knox, because it's such a fascinating chart and storyline here.
It is.
I didn't even look, you know, in order to really cover this story, I really have to go back and look closely at the actual date of the, you know, that the murder happened and the subsequent dates in her life that followed what happened. But I can tell you, I know you missed part of it, but there's definitely stuff going on right now with her, which shows, you know, why she's feeling the way she is.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And, you know, her name is difficult. It's just not that
it
easy
is.
For her. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And when you throw in that karmic effect, the 4-8 factor and everything else that presents, that just compounds it even more, so.
Yeah. You know what I really think, Rara? I think she rubbed the Italian media the wrong way. She's got a double nine, and so she's outspoken. She's got that Mars, that strong Mars in Leo, and I just think there's something about her. They just didn't like her. And I think that played against her as well, because as you know, and as we all know, if the media's on your side, it really helps, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they didn't like her at all, and that set up a perception with many millions of people that, you know, which may have been untrue, you know. So I think that really plays into her Mars in the communication house right there. Man, she has, there's some challenges with Pluto. I mean, you just look at that. It's difficult, you know. So
now, you may have touched on this, but with her ascendant in Gemini.
Yeah.
that brings in the twins factor. What's your take on that?
You mean the two sides of her?
Yeah.
You talk about that? Yeah. Yes, I do find that with some Geminis. Not all Geminis have that in them. It could be with her, though. But here's the other thing. She has not only that and Mars in that third house, which is naturally ruled by Gemini, but she also has that opposition to Mercury from Neptune that I talked about. You know, that's that. So she's easily caught up in dreaming and even deception, self-deception. So there is a definitely strong, challenging Mercury side to her, where she's mercurial and sort of secretive, and that's why people don't know if should they trust her or not, you know. So, yeah, but I it's true. She may have those two sides to her, for sure, with that Gemini placement. Plus, it's an eight. I mean, she has the eights on her four corners.
That's right. Isn't that something?
Oh, my God. And then the eight name, for God's sake, that's like, hello.
And yet she's missing eights in her letters.
Yes, that's right. That's right. But she makes up for it in a sort of difficult way. You know, if her name was different, it would be very helpful to her. She really, that's the first thing I'd tell her. Yeah.
The number of critical degrees, as they increase, it increases the intensity, too. And my stars, she had eight critical degrees activated in her transit chart. 10, if you count a couple of the non-main angles, that would be 10. But, that's pretty intense, I would think.
That's so intense. Yeah, that is really intense. I'm also noticing that her Mercury's at 8 degrees, you know, the ruler of her ascendant. So, and her sun is at 16. Boy, a lot of ups and downs there. She could, though, you know, I have to say, with looking at her chart, she could make a lot of money writing a book, a lot, because of where things are placed for her. I just don't know with her name how it's going to pan out. She's always going to have polarization in her life because of that, you know. So, but I don't know if she's getting a book deal or not, but I think she could. And if she does, she could really do well with that, so.
I'm sure somebody will be hopping on this if they have
Oh, yeah.
It worked.
That's right. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, Tanya. Well, I think that about covers it for now. We're not with Amanda ourselves. We're still working on her, but, oh, my gosh, that is a story to tell.
It sure is. Why did you write a book, Rayar, about it? You can get famous.
I think I'll let somebody else do this one.
Okay. But, you know, it truly could be a book, you know, just to teach people about astrology and numerology. It's interesting. Yeah, it's a good idea, actually. All right. Well, thank you, Rayora, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All righty, then. That was quite a study of a person in the news, and any of you in Future Forecast Formula who want to write a book about this, feel free, you know. I mean, it is, I think books like that are fascinating to people as long as you don't get too technical and can explain what you're seeing. But anyway, it is an idea. And we do learn from studying people in the news, you know, especially people who are covered extensively like she is. We can really, really look at their charts and learn from them. And it's a fantastic practice. So I welcome any of you, like Linda and Rara, who asked me about something happening in the news. We can always do that. Number one, it's interesting to all of us, and number two, it's definitely something that helps us, you know, as astronumerologists. So, all righty, if you want to speak up, now's your chance. Star 6 is what you press. Otherwise, we will call it a day for today and wish all of you a fantastic end of the month, great March, and I will see you on the 18th of March again. And maybe by then we'll have a few more questions so we can really get into the nuts and bolts. Oh, we have another person. Yay, this happened yesterday. Must be Mercury retrograde. Okay, so right as I'm about to hang up, somebody lifts their hand. So let's go check who this is. Hello.
Hi, Tanya. It's Rebecca.
Hi, Rebecca. How are you?
I am fine. I'm running around getting headshots and working on my web page and driving myself crazy here, but wanted to get in on the call. I know that you were about to wrap up, and I just wanted to say I really have enjoyed your calls lately. They have been so informative.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that, Rebecca. Since you're an astrologer for how many years? 30 years?
40 years.
Yeah. It's been fun. You know, there's been I really welcome the depth of the people in you know, Numerology Academy and Future Forecast for me. I really think that the interest in the subject matter really fuels the nature of these calls. And so I take them very seriously. I really do want to go in there and dig deeply. So I think it's fun, you know.
It really is. And, you know, I've been an astrologer for 40 years. I hang out with astrologers. I go to meetups with astrologers. And I just wanted to say that I'm always learning something. I don't care if a person has been an astrologer for a year or 40 years. You still always learn something.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. And, you know, there's always more to learn. How can you ever get to the bottom of anything? You know, because it's always changing. And, you know,
I
appreciate
cool.
that. And now that we factor in numerology, it gets even more interesting. You know,
does.
Like just now with Rara, we were discussing how the current name number affects the numbers in the astrology transits. And I'm like, who else is doing that?
It's absolutely inspirational, you know. It really is. So
yeah.
I just wanted to thank you and give a call and shout out to you that I've really, really enjoyed all of these phone calls.
Oh, thanks so much. I appreciate that, Rebecca. It's really nice. Great. Well, good, and good luck with everything, and we'll talk soon, but I know you're stepping up big time, so send you lots of energy. Now, don't get, by the way, everybody, it's Mercury retrograde, so stay patient, okay? So, you know, it's like things will move much more quickly shortly, but you are definitely, Rebecca, preparing now. You're in a preparation stage, so it's important. You know,
yeah, I just signed a contract today, and I keep telling myself it's Mercury retrograde, and but I've got to sign it now, and I've got to sign it. So I did. And,
well, you know, look at your chart as well, and look at your cycles. I don't always feel I've signed things in Mercury retrograde. I've signed leases. You know, when I was renting for a while, when I was divorced, and it was fine. There was no problem. So. I think it also depends on you knowing what's going on and making an intention and a statement that it's going to be fine and your numbers speak to this, you know, and you know, whatever. You can make it so that it really, the intention that you set supersedes whatever you feel the Mercury retrograde might affect in your life. So definitely don't. I wouldn't worry about it. I think the worry about it actually really, you know, makes it worse.
Dead. Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, what I did was my worrying about the intense contract, 9 pages worth of legal talk, forced me to step out and ask people questions about it, and I had some folks call me that it had been with. Under various contracts like this one, and they said, you know, it's just fine. It's totally all on the up and up. And I've known this person that is running this thing that I just signed on with for a little while, and she's very highly regarded in the field. So I'm actually it's a pretty good opportunity. I think I'm really excited about it.
Oh, it's fantastic. I'm really happy that you have this coming. So, yeah, so in terms of the Mercury retrograde, I really would not worry about it. Really,
okay.
It's not like you're signing a mortgage or something. It's
it's
quite different. Yeah. So, good. Well, any other questions? Or
nope.
Is that's it for today?
That's it.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll speak soon on our Astral Alliance, and then we'll now close down the call for today, and again, have a fantastic 4 weeks. We'll speak exactly 4 weeks from today on March 18th. All right. Thanks so much, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.